Today, we're discussing the rise of independent voters in American society, who the loud minority in politics are, the realignment among suburban women and Latinos, and the respect owed to being obsessed with one's craft. Welcome to Overcoming the Divide, a platform dedicated to insightful political discourse and debate. Today, we're speaking with Corey Nathan, a creative businessman and entrepreneur who works and collaborates with people across political, religious, and social divides to help better understand and mend some of those fractures that currently exist among our society. This segment is part of a larger conversation that will be released March 26, 2024. If you enjoy this conversation and want to hear the rest of it, hit that subscribe button and throw a like to not miss a beat and always stay updated with Overcoming the Divide. Thank you. I'm curious for your thoughts because a Gallup poll back in April found that, you know, record breaking of Americans viewed themselves as independent. It was upward, it was 49%, and the other two parties were around like 20 something percent each. Yeah. So what do you think just turns people off about the contemporary modern political parties, the Democrats and the Republicans? Because, you know, you have a lot of experience talking to people across the political spectrums.
Well, there's a lot there. First of all, there's been a lot of studies over the last 10 years at least that kind of lead to the same conclusion. And you will find a lot of folks will identify as independents. Right now, I think the number is hovering somewhere around 42%, depending on where which survey you're getting. But the, I think a lot of the reason is there was another study, a really broad study that included tens of thousands of people. So there was a lot of data feeding into this study. I'm going to say it's the Common Ground Committee, but it's not that. It's related to the Common Ground Committee. But it was a really broad study. And the conclusion that they came to was at the end of the day, I think they called it highly engaged, meaning what we would think of as extremists. So guys who get up every morning and are thinking about it, you know, first thing in the morning and are tweeting last thing before they go to bed. They're watching the programs, listening to the podcast, you know, all day, every day. They're really super engaged. And what we would think of as like the extremists. What they found was there was something along the lines of 5 or 6% on, I hate the right left, but you know, for shorthand, we'll just say about 5 or 6% on the right and about 7 or 8% on the left are extremists. Everybody else, about 85% of us, are somewhere in the middle. But the narratives are being defined by that 5 or 6% and 7, 8%, right? They're being defined by the screamers, by the extremists, and they're taking all the oxygen out of the room. So number one, it's important for the rest of us to know that. It's important for the rest of us. There's another term called the exhausted majority. David French has been talking about, a lot about this. And it means that like, oh man, I just don't have time for this. You know, and that person screaming, they must know what they're talking about. So let them, you know, let them take over, let them take all the space in the village square, if you will. Number one, it's important for us in the middle not to fall prey to just being the exhausted. And then we cede the ground to the extremists. We need to be engaged because the truth is a vast, vast majority of us are somewhere in the middle and have a lot more in common than the extremists on this side or that side. So yeah, it's true. A lot of us, you know, with the thing that you were talking about, the independence, the truth is most of us, there's an organization called Braver Angels that I'm involved with. And Braver Angels, when you come to their, I forgot what they call it, but when you come as a delegate, last year it was in Gettysburg, they do great work. And they ask you, are you a little bit more red, a little bit more blue? I said, I'm an independent. And they had a follow-up questionnaire because they're like, no, you're not. Because for the most part, they're usually right. Usually somebody says I'm an independent. At the end of the day, they vote all Republican, all Democrat. There's really a very, very small percentage of people who are purple, wearing purple. And so there is that folks, you know, veer a little right, a little left. But still, like, I still think even if at the end of the day, they're what we would call a traditional Democrat, traditional Republican, there's still some possibility of persuasion there, you know? And there is like that, I don't know, Mike Madrid in 2020, he was like one of the most brilliant numbers politics campaign guys in the country. And he identified what's called the Bannon line. So within different constituencies, there's that middle, there's that persuadable voter. And the Bannon line, he kind of hijacked it from Steve Bannon, but he said, he identified certain constituencies that were, in fact, that were in that purple area that were persuadable. And at that, in that election, it was 5 or 6%. So for him, what he was targeting was not just independents, but also registered Republicans that would either leave it blank, do a write-in, or actually vote for Biden in 2020. And it was 5 or 6%. It's the same thing this time. It's just a matter of figuring out who they are. I think those constituencies now, if we're talking large groups of people, I think that I was just talking to a woman named Rachel Vindman, who's one of the co-hosts of the Suburban Women Problem podcast. It's a great podcast. And part of it is, I think that is the hinge upon which the 2024 election is going to swing. Suburban women who, if they're old enough, they would have been voting for Reagan in the first Bush, probably the second Bush. But sometime around 2008, 2012, and definitely by 2016, that college-educated suburban woman, she might have still been registered Republican, but she ain't having, you know, today's version of the Republican Party that she grew up with, you know? So, yeah, 42%, 49%. I've heard those numbers too, but that's where all the action really is. We think it's from the extremes, but that's just because they're loud, you know? But we got to take some space back for the rest of us, you know?
Well, you brought up a good point, though, that I think plays true, which is you use the word obsessed. And someone who's obsessed with their, quote, craft is going to be better than someone who is not.
Yeah.
Like a sport, someone who leisurely plays tennis will not be as good as a pro athlete who wakes up at 6 a.m. and plays tennis every day, and so on and so forth. So I think it intuitively makes sense that the people who are most politically active or engaged, as you said, they're going to be obsessed and they're kind of going to dominate the discourse. They're going to dominate politics because they're the ones whose jobs revolve around it, their livelihoods revolve around it, families, friends, networks. And that adds up to me. And to your point, the exhausted majority, it's like, it's being exhausted from like not feeling you have a say, but I never want like blame the voter or the American for where we are, but it's like, well, if someone who's putting in the work or is involved and is engaged, like it just makes sense that this is going to be how it is until people say, you know what, I am going to, you know, run for that seat on the city council or even lower on like a, you know, commissioner's board or something, or just get more involved in my community. And things are just going to run its course by these people who are hyper politically engaged because they are obsessed with their craft. And, you know, props to them for being obsessed, even though I don't really appreciate their positions. But nonetheless, like anyone who's really going after it, it's like, okay, well, I know why this is happening, if that makes sense. I don't know why they're so extreme. Maybe there's a lot of reasons for that. But just to understand why they're kind of dominating the discourse is more intuitive. I want to play into another thing you said, which was the education point, college educated women, because you're seeing that as being this almost litmus test for whether someone's going to be more conservative or liberal, which is whether they received a college education. You know, that's the polling kind of indicates that now. And you see more men who are not going to college trending more towards conservative leaders and thinking. And then on the opposite side, women who are trending more, enrolling in college more than men, trending more liberal. So that's an interesting line that cut crosses a number of categories and topics. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting how like the realignment in both parties and on the political spectrum that affects both gender, education. It's very involved, but nonetheless, I mean, it intrigues me, and I think a good amount of other people too.
And listen, it's the job of a large coalition to be aware of that stuff. You know, if your message is alienating large chunks of the population or the constituency that you're supposed to serve, you got to be aware of that, you know, because your job is not just to represent the extreme fringe of your constituency, the loudest of your constituency, but your entire constituency. So, yeah, like there's a lot of people like, you know, Mike Madrid also has this, the guy I was referring to about that he focused on the Bannon line. And he was a large part of getting that Bannon line north of 5 or 6%, especially in those swing states in 2020. He's also been writing op-eds and trying to educate the Democratic Party. He actually grew up as a Republican. I think he still identifies as a Republican. but he's not a MAGA guy. So he's been trying to educate his Democratic friends, like, hey, listen, you have a Latino problem. And when he first started saying it, at least 2 years ago, if not longer, a lot of his friends and people who commented on the, you know, he wrote a New York Times piece, a lot of people who were commenting reacted not to the substance of what he was saying, but as people who just didn't like what he was saying and were responding, whether it was ad hominem or attacks or just kind of temper tantrum throwing. And Mike's like, say what you want, do what you want, throw all the temper tantrums you want, but this thing is real. You can either yell at me for, I don't know, not looking the way you want me to look, or we can deal with this problem. It exists. It's kind of like throwing a temper tantrum about gravity. You know, you can throw a temper tantrum about gravity. It exists regardless of what your reaction to it is. But you better get used to it, because if you test whether gravity exists or not from a 20-story building, it's not going to work out well for you.